So, Alabama fans who've you've made your voices heard on this show, and whoa, goodness gracious, they're everywhere. Wow.
We may have heard from a couple of Alabama fans over the last 4 days.
It's time for the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back. It's Ben and Darren again at the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast, where we are offering you the best biased, unbiased opinions in the SEC. As you'll notice, my co-host Darren is wearing a Vanderbilt cap. He's a Vanderbilt fan.
That's right.
You may have noticed this last week or the week before, or maybe this is the first time. I'm actually wearing an LSU cap, and I've got an LSU flag behind me. So we make no qualms about it.
That's right.
Unlike some folks who try to present themselves as completely unbiased, when you listen to them and you know for certain they are not unbiased.
Exactly.
We just put it out there. We are fans of certain schools. We try to cover all the schools, and we have a lot of fun doing it. So let's get right into our headlines for today, Darren. And let's start with the AP Top 25, the latest rankings. Georgia is maintaining that number one ranking. Georgia just, wow. I'm not sure who's going to beat Georgia right
That's
now.
That's exactly right.
Texas at number seven, Alabama at number eight, Missouri at number 11, Ole Miss fell to 13, Oklahoma 14, LSU 15, and Tennessee at 21. Those are your SEC teams in the top 25. Of course, we are including OU and Texas technically a year earlier, but we already have welcomed them into the SEC fold.
That's right. They're SEC.
So let's talk about the SEC championship. The game is set, and I'm not sure how surprised anybody can be at this. Georgia and Alabama are playing. Now, earlier in the year, you might say, Alabama, they're not going to make it.
Right.
But this may be one of Nick Saban's best coaching jobs ever at Alabama. He's got them steamrolling through the West. Now they're facing a powerful Georgia Bulldogs team. And Darren, I'm really looking forward to this game.
I tell you, I don't think you can help but be excited for it, because both, like you said, truthfully, you just being absolutely legitimate about it, 3-4 weeks in, I think you could have sat and had a conversation where you talked yourself into a Tennessee versus LSU, you know, the way that we might actually see that this year, because Alabama was not looking like Alabama. You know, when they're starting three different quarterbacks, this is just something you've never seen with Alabama. And Georgia didn't do anything wrong, but everybody wanted to talk about, well, this doesn't really look like the Georgia we're accustomed to. Is this the year they fall? The third year is so difficult and all of that kind of stuff. And so I think you could have talked yourself into it if you spent enough time thinking about it. But now that we're here and looking, especially over the last couple of weeks, the way both of these teams have played, man, it's going to be exciting. I don't know how it's not a great game. I mean, you know, especially now, Georgia, you've got Brock Bowers back, 26 days post-op or whatever. So you know that he's coming in healthy and going to be coming into the championship game healthier than would have been otherwise. So it looks like it's going to be a fun game. It's going to be, hopefully nobody gets hurt. That's the biggest thing. Now that we know who the champions are, each division champion is, let's just let nobody get hurt. And be excited about the game, because they haven't disappointed, you know, when it's been them. So it'll be a good game again.
Going back several episodes, particularly around the South Florida game where Alabama played and struggled, they used different quarterbacks. Jalen Milroe was benched for that game. You and I said at the time that Jalen Milroe is the best quarterback that Alabama has.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's proven to be the truth as he has blossomed throughout this season.
Yes, definitely. And I tell you, you also have to give props to Tommy, I'm blank on the last name.
Reese.
There you go.
Tommy Reese.
Because I think you can see the development of his play calling and what he's doing with the offense, of doing what any strong and lasting offensive coordinator will do, is make your system work for the talent of your team, not force your system on the team. Let's see what this talent can do and how do I need to adjust the system. I think it's pretty obvious what's been going on. And so you got to give him props on this as well.
So Alabama fans you've made your voices heard on this show and oh goodness gracious, they're everywhere. Wow.
We may have heard from a couple of Alabama fans over the last 4 days.
So we vacation a lot in Gulf Shores, and I know that you and your family go down to the Gulf Shores, Orange Beach area as well. And I've had some great interactions with Alabama fans over the year. We find some things to agree on, but there's still that barrier there. And
absolutely,
one of the most memorable ones, I got in an elevator and I was, of course, wearing an LSU hat, and an older man got in the elevator and he's wearing an Alabama hat. And he looked at me and I said, "Hello. Hi, sir." And he goes, "Hello." And I said, "You from around here?" And he said some little town in Alabama. He said, "Where are you from?" I said, "Louisiana." He goes, "Oh." And there was no more talking the rest of the way. When it was his turn to get off the elevator, he turned to me before he got off and he looked me dead in the eyes and said, "Roll Tide." And I said, "Go Tigers."
That's fantastic. Well, we did not silence any Alabama fans this week. That is for sure. When we heard from a lot of Oklahoma fans at the very first of this season, that we had a lot of interaction on our YouTube page and people commenting. We talked about Oklahoma fans. We hear you. You know, you're chiming in. You're watching the videos. You're commenting, and we appreciate it. So we're going to do the same thing for Alabama fans. Now, let's be honest. Alabama fans may not have necessarily agreed with our take the way the Oklahoma fans loved when we called them giant killers. It wasn't the same level of interaction or the same type of interaction with the Alabama fans. But nonetheless, got to tell you, we loved every minute of it. Even the staunch Alabama level of disagreement that you brought to the table. We loved every bit of it and want more. Not going to argue. Just keep it coming. We love the interaction.
I thought some of the comments were incredibly creative. And,
absolutely.
You know, you keep defending your team. You keep standing up for your team. And
absolutely,
we'll keep picking at each other, but we appreciate you being a part of the show. Speaking of Alabama, there's more to celebrate because Jalen Milroe was part
That's
of a
right.
record-setting day in the SEC, the first Alabama quarterback ever to be responsible to score 6 touchdowns, 3 running, Man. 3 passing. So, again, a testament to how that offense has come along and how he's really taken charge as the signal caller and basically the general out there on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. He is just – that's really awesome for him that the way the season started, that's kind of the culmination where he's now setting records. He's taking his team to the championship game. I mean, good for him. For somebody to start a season as rough as this season was, no matter who it is, as for a player, as a person, you're happy to see that kind of development and that kind of an end to a season. Good for him.
But Milroe was not the only SEC
no.
player setting records Saturday. Cody Schrader, who we've mentioned before, the running back from Missouri, to record 200 yards rushing and 100 yards receiving. He was 35 carries for 205 yards and a touchdown. That's a 5.9 average per carry against Tennessee.
Exactly.
5 catches for 116 yards, 1 touchdown. He now stands in terms of rushing yardage at 1,124, which puts him first in the SEC and 7th nationally. So Cody Schrader continuing to produce mm-hmm. big numbers for the Missouri Tigers.
And you know, a couple of episodes you made the point, when you see him and you see what he's doing coming from D2 to doing what he's doing now, man, if you've got dreams, don't give up on them. Just look at this dude. And he just continues to say, Oh, wait, I've got another dream I'm going to make come true. Oh, wait, he just keeps taking it up a level and up a level and up a level. So awesome to see. So happy for him and the kind of season he's having.
Missouri Tigers have been the surprise team, definitely, of the SEC this season.
Absolutely.
In other news in college football, we have a coaching carousel that has already begun with the big bombshell this past Sunday morning. Jimbo Fisher is out at Texas A&M after six seasons, a disappointing tenure, which is why he no longer has a job. During Jimbo's tenure at Texas A&M, zero national titles, zero SEC titles, zero SEC West titles. Mm-hmm. It was a struggle. They expected national championships. They had incredible recruiting classes. The university, the program has... seems like unlimited money, but so they're going to be paying him about $75 million to not coach any longer as they begin a search for his replacement. When you look at the Jimbo Fisher tenure, Darren, and where things are right now, what are some of your thoughts?
You know, it just never, I think is Ross Bjork, the AD, I really think in his press conference, he summed it up best. You can't really, something was just off, and the program was just stuck in neutral. And I really think that is the best description, because you've got a good coordinator on both sides of the ball this year from everything you see. You know, the defense has not necessarily been the struggle. So you've had a good coordinator. You bring in a great offensive mind. Both sides of the ball seem to really be having their times where they really kind of establish, okay, we're on the right track. And then there are these natural kind of dips. And, you know, he referred continuously, and I don't know what the message behind the message was, but he referred continuously during his press conference to having confidence in our approach, feeling confident in what we're going to do, both administrative and on the field. So whatever it was that was off, I mean, obviously it was off, and he got to the point where he, you know, last week had the conversation with the president of the school and ultimately in the Board of Regents and said, you know, the other example he used is that car that does 55 miles per hour sitting in the express lane and everybody's in the right-hand lane passing them. He basically said, we made this hire to get into the express lane and we're doing 55 and everybody else is passing us in the right-hand lane and we had to do something about it. And you hate, you know, I saw Nick Saban today. He was asking his press conference what he thought about both of these guys, both Jimbo and Zach Arnett, that we're going to talk about in a little bit, losing their job. And he said, you hate to see anybody lose their job, no matter who it is, where they are. You don't ever want to see someone be relieved of their duties. And that's a very, very true statement. You hate to see that. But, man, nobody, including Jimbo, had to be caught off guard. You know, Ross Bjork even said he basically just went to Jimbo's office Sunday morning right around 9:30, somewhere in that neighborhood, and they had a very brief conversation. There was nothing extravagant that needed to be said. You know, everybody was really, this is where we are, and this is what we have no choice but to do. And even though I didn't necessarily buy into the Jimbo hire at the level that A&M fans were excited about it, I don't know that I saw it with them just never really getting it going and never really, I mean, with the exception of, you know, that 2020 year that was so weird, probably he would have already been gone beforehand if the 2020 hadn't been the pandemic season. If it would have been a regular season, probably wouldn't have went as well. They just got some momentum and there were so many struggles with all teams. But outside of that, he never really got that team to the point where they made a presence in the SEC. And when you've got the kind of money that talks at A&M, that's not going to lie. It's amazing that it lasted 6 years.
It will be one of the most coveted jobs open right now, and it will send ripple effects throughout the rest of the country because of the resources that A&M has.
Absolutely.
You think about what Lane Kiffin was talking about after the Georgia game about the how tough it is to recruit five stars to Ole Miss and.
Yep.
You're not going to have that problem at A&M.
No way. No way. And it's funny that you mentioned Lane Kiffin. You know, that's one of the names that's already coming up. It took basically, by the time the press conference was over, lists were already being put out, and Lane Kiffin's name was on every single one of them. That seems an odd, just because of the things we've talked about with the struggles he has about winning the big game. It seems like an odd thing, but I mean, there's no way his name's not on the list. A couple of others just to throw out there. Mike Elko from Duke has an A&M connection. His name is immediately on the list. Lance Leipold from Kansas. Jeff Traylor, who I've been a fan of for a couple of seasons at UTSA. And Mike Norvell at Florida State is another name that has come up quite a bit. And then there's, you know, Dabo Swinney, Deion Sanders, Kiff Kingsbury is another name that's been thrown out there that I find odd. But I've seen that several different places, not just one kind of a one-off. I've seen his name pop up on several different lists. But the one of the big names that's been the most talked about from what I've seen and heard today has been Dan Lanning at Oregon. That seems to be the hot name that even I listened to an A&M podcast, a couple of them on Monday, and his name was all over those podcasts. It will probably be one of the first names that's called. And what are your? I don't know that I get that. You're going from. To me, you're taking just as much of a risk as you did when you hired Jimbo, if not more of a risk, because Jimbo at least had a national championship. Now, what we've learned, you know, in this tenure, it shows just how much the players, you know, had to do with that versus coaching. But to me, that, I mean, he's 2 years in. That seems like a big risk, because you can't get this one wrong. That's for sure. You cannot. You're already paying. Jimbo will make more a day to not coach at Texas A&M than he made in his first year as an offensive assistant coach in 1992. He will make more per day than he did that year. So even though it is A&M that just seems to be able to pump money out of the ground, I mean, there's a huge financial commitment, and you can't get this one wrong. So to me, Dan Lanning seems a little bit of an odd choice. What are your thoughts on that?
A&M's not going to be able to outbid what Oregon can pay.
That's true. That's a great point.
And Dan Lanning may have Oregon in a better spot than A&M is right now. The only thing I could figure is if Dan Lanning wants to get back in the SEC.
Very good. Very true point. Yeah.
But we will watch that and see what happens. That's not the only coaching news we have. Today, Monday, news came out that Zach Arnett, who had succeeded Mike Leach after his untimely passing, was fired after 11 games. He's 4-6 this season, 1-6 in the SEC. And that was enough for Mississippi State AD Zach Selman to say, we're just going to let you go right now. Unfortunately, Selman was hired in January.
Right.
Arnett was hired in December. Mm-hmm. So this was not the AD that hired Arnett, and it came back to bite him in the end. And a stellar defensive mind. He's only 37 years old. From 2020 to 2022, he was the defensive coordinator for Mississippi State. I think in that span of time, he had three defenses in the top five in the SEC. He cut his teeth at San Diego State from 2011 to 2019. Darren, I don't think he's going to be unemployed for very long.
No, I don't think he'll have any head coaching offers beating down his door. But I assume before he got to the car, there were agents of head coaches talking to him off the books about, would you be interested in coming here as a DC? I probably didn't even have the boxes packed before those texts were coming in. You know, and I think what you said hit it. I think this is a direct result of the administration that was in place at the time, with the tragedy that was everything that happened around, you know, with Mike Leach dying so unexpectedly. The administration did the best thing they could to kind of bridge that gap in the only way you can, even though it didn't even really do that, but it was really kind of the only move that you could do. And then now we're almost a year removed from that. And Zach Zelman, it's not his guy. And when you get embarrassed by the team who fired their coach the day before, I think it gives a guy that wants to, you know, an AD that wants to hire his guy, I think it gives him that opportunity. And that's exactly what we saw happen today. I honestly thought that Zach Arnett would not make it beyond this year, but it kind of caught me off guard a little bit that they didn't let him finish the year. I really kind of thought they would at least let him finish the year. But, you know, transfer portal, all that stuff is so tricky now. I guess you do what you got to do to maintain all of those avenues. So a couple of names that have come up in connection with this job. There was an insider, I use the air quotes, a Mississippi State insider that very early this morning, I would say within a half hour of the announcement being made or the announcement coming out or the news leaking out, not even being made yet, that threw out that the top two names, not necessarily the guys that they think are going to take the job, but the top two names that the administration would be contacting are Shane Beamer and Dan Mullins. How about that name? Did you see that coming? And like I said, the report that what was thrown out was these are phone calls that are going to be made. Neither one of those really makes sense to me. I mean, yeah, Dan Mullen, he won at Mississippi State and you know, at one point had them at number one in the nation. I think it was only for 1 week, but still they had their number one ranking for that 1 week. But other names that have come out that seem to make a little bit more sense, Jamie Chadwell from Liberty, Rhett Lashley from SMU, Jeff Libby from Oklahoma, Willie Fritz from Tulane, and then Glenn Schumann, the Georgia D coordinator, is another name that I think that's just somebody from the Georgia tree has to be mentioned kind of thing. I don't know about that one. But those other names, you know, Willie Fritz, I could see somebody going after him to get him into the SEC with what's, you know, what he's been able to do at Tulane. Jeff Libby getting a shot in the SEC as an offensive coordinator that's obviously done well. That kind of makes sense. The Jamie Chadwell thing, I don't know what the deal is with him. His name always gets brought up with SEC jobs, but I don't know if he's just not been interested or if there's something that's just people aren't willing to pull the trigger. I don't know what that is, but, you know, his name comes up a lot with SEC jobs and just that nothing ever happens. It's the words I was really ineffectively trying to get out there, except just conversation about him being a good possibility. So, but some interesting names on that list.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. A lot of action, a lot of movement that will be happening. There will be more openings that will come about as the end of this season progresses, and we'll stay on top of all of that and relay as much information as we can. We can't leave the coaching carousel section, even though this does not relate to a coaching firing or hiring. We have to talk about Jim Harbaugh at Michigan.
Yes.
Suspended by the Big Ten for 3 games, he has appealed, or the university has appealed on his behalf. He wasn't on the sideline for Saturday's win at Penn State. He wasn't really needed because they were playing Penn State, and James Franklin's record against top 10 teams is rather abysmal.
Yeah.
Michigan pulled out a win. Harbaugh will have a hearing this Friday in which he intends fully to speak on his own behalf. But the narrative that Michigan is trying to craft here, Darren, blows my mind. That somehow he is a victim. The interim coach was crying on camera, talking about how much he loves Harbaugh, and we did this for him. His players were saying this. It was almost like this is a guy that's battling a terminal illness.
Right.
Or he was in a horrific accident. He is being punished for cheating.
Right.
And Michigan is digging its heels in, propping him up. I think Harbaugh even said that Michigan is America's team.
Yeah.
I think that was today. What planet are the folks in Ann Arbor living on right now?
I think they almost be, they almost have found a way to get just on Mackinac Island there by themselves and isolate and create their own reality. Cause I don't understand, but didn't something similar to this happen the last time he was suspended weren't the players wearing like free gym or something like that t-shirt? I mean, this is just beyond silliness, but man, you know, Michigan loves their Jim Harbaugh, you know, from a quarterback to a coach. I guess I don't get any of it. And to me, him being suspended, you know, I see the league taking a step and trying to do something, but at the same time, I mean, the dude's being suspended for cheating and has shown all along that he's just kind of going to do things his way. You think there wasn't some GA standing on the sideline with an iPad that had – he was watching everything and talking to people? I mean, who are we kidding? I can guarantee you he was everywhere on that sideline, probably patched in from his car sitting in the parking lot into the coach's headsets. It wouldn't surprise me anyway. So
it's no secret that we're biased when it comes to the Big Ten.
Yep.
But this is pretty borderline absurd.
Yep.
That this I can't even put it into words, Darren. Is it because they think they're going to be in the college football playoff? Is it because they think they might have a chance to win the national title this year? What is the point in selling your soul and making a hero out of someone who's being punished for breaking the rules?
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't get any of it, biased or not. I don't get any of it. And the longer it goes and the more Michigan talks, the less sense it makes to me. just to be very honest, I don't get it at all.
Well, we'll move on from that, and we'll all be watching to see what happens at the hearing this coming Friday. In other news, going out to the Pac-12, the Arizona State Athletic Director, Ray Anderson, resigned today. You may be wondering, why are we mentioning that on this podcast, on this particular show? If you go back to one of our early episodes from this season, we have a diehard West Virginia fan named Nicole, who's been a longtime listener of the show. The Arizona State AD, when it was talked about Arizona State joining the Big 12, that he wasn't going to West Virginia.
Right.
That struck a nerve with Nicole, who is a West Virginia fan.
Yep.
And she sent in a rant about the Arizona State AD. Now, is there a correlation between Nicole's rant and his resignation? I don't know that there is, but you can't disprove that there's not.
That's exactly right.
So your voice makes a difference on this show.
You can't prove that A. I can't prove that A has to do with B, but you can't prove that it doesn't. So.
We've got some other news to mention very briefly. Some injury news, unfortunately. Jonathan Brooks, the starting running back from Texas, has had a terrific year, 1,139 yards rushing, 10 touchdowns, is out for the rest of the season with a torn ACL. Also, John Emery, LSU's fifth-year running back, suffered a torn ACL in the victory over Florida this past Saturday. He was not the leading rusher for LSU, but he's significant. He was a holdover from the 2019 championship team, a former five-star player in Louisiana. He finishes with a little over 1,300 yards in rushing for LSU. Again, we hate to see guys injured in such a way, but we did want to mention both of those individuals as well.
Yeah, hate to see it.
But speaking of LSU, let's talk about the Heisman Trophy front runner.
Yes, we should.
Jaden Daniels, part of that record-setting day in the SEC this past Saturday. Jaden Daniels, currently, nationally, are y'all ready for this? Leads the nation in total yards, 4,082. If you go over to our friends at a network like ESPN, they're going to break down passing yardage, and you're going to see Michael Penix up there and Bo Nix and Caleb Williams, but we're talking total yards because the Heisman is not about the best quarterback. The Heisman is about the best player. Right. The Heisman is not the best player on the best team. The Heisman is the best player, period. Jaden Daniels leads the nation in total yards, 4,082 yards. That equates to 408.2 yards a game. He leads the nation in quarterback rating, in passing touchdowns, in rushing yardage for a quarterback. And he's doing this against a top 10 strength of schedule. LSU is somewhere around 7, I think, in terms of strength of schedule. For perspective, Bo Nix at Oregon, their strength of schedule is 55. Michael Penix at Washington, their strength of schedule is 40. So nowhere near the level of competition, the strength of competition that Jaden Daniels is doing this against. And against Florida, that 81-yard run, the 51-yard run, Darren, he looked like a video game.
Yeah.
Like you're playing Madden at home or college football. The moves that he was making, he was on a whole different level. And so right now, I don't know how you put anybody above him in terms of the Heisman race.
And to me, that's the piece that no one, even if you want to make an argument for Michael Penix, Carson Beck, Marvin Harrison Jr., you can make an argument that they are not only good players, that they're great players that are having great seasons. But what you can't do is say that there has been a single game for any of those guys where they have affected the game and their team on the level that Jaden Daniels has in every single game this season. I mean, one person with 400 total yards per game, not just passing yards, you know, it's not just 150 rushing yards per game. It is 400 total yards. So it doesn't matter if it's his arm, doesn't matter if it's his feet. He is affecting the game and affecting his team. And that is the true definition of what the Heisman is. Who's the greatest player in the sport? And when you look at how he affects his team and how he affects the game, I don't know how you can argue that anyone else needs to be or should be at the top of that list. I don't get that at all.
Yeah. Through with his arm, with his legs. He's just risen above. This week they have Georgia State, a chance to pad those numbers.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we have these November games against competition like this, and we've talked about that before.
Yep.
But then he'll finish against A&M, which unfortunately is an 11 o'clock game. I don't know who, SEC, TV networks, you got a Heisman finalist here, and you put him at 11 o'clock on a Saturday. We're going to watch Georgia destroy Georgia Tech Saturday night.
Exactly. I mean,
we could be watching the front runner. Yeah. Anyway, that's a whole different schedule, but a whole different conversation. But Jaden Daniels right now is leading the pack in terms of Heisman candidates, which could be a historic season for him. It already has been. He set several records. The only player in history to amount the kind of yardage passing and running combined that he has. No one else has ever done it to this degree, which takes us to this week in sports history.
November 20th, 1982, the play. The 1982 edition of the big game between Stanford and California ended with one of the most bizarre and memorable plays ever. With 4 seconds left, Stanford kicked off the Cal, leading 2019. Cal's Kevin Mullen received the ball and pitched it to Richard Rodgers, who tossed it to Dwight Garner, who threw it back to Rodgers, who pitched it to Marriott Ford, who tossed it back to Mullen, who ran through the Stanford band that had stormed the field, thinking the game was over, and scored the winning touchdown. The play was controversial, as some argued that Garner's knee was down and Ford's lateral was forward, but the officials upheld the touchdown and Cal won 25-20. The play was dubbed the play by Cal announcer Joe Stark, who made an iconic call that included the phrase, "The band is out on the field." The play has been replayed and analyzed many times and has been ranked as one of the greatest plays in sports history.
Oh, thank you.
Remember to join our CBS Sports Pick'em, where you can pick games every week and maybe even win the contest this year for the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast. Paul is on a roll, another perfect week. So you have a chance to catch up to him. We'd love to have you be a part of that as well. Speaking of our sports pick'em, we're not making picks in this particular episode in terms of all the games. We're going to do our four down territory, but Thursday we'll release a separate episode in which we make our picks for this week. So be sure to watch for that episode on Thursday. You won't ever miss an episode if you go ahead and hit that subscribe button.
That's right.
You'll always be notified when a new episode comes out. Also, last week we were introduced to Doug the Buckeye, and he's got some things to say about the SEC this week and in support of his beloved Ohio State Buckeyes and the Big Ten. Now, if you're a Michigan fan, you may not like what he has to say, but that episode will be released on Wednesday. So be looking for that as well.
And as a tease, just Doug brings the thunder this week. You're definitely going to want to catch that. He brings the thunder. It's going to be a good what he has to say and in our conversation about it. He definitely is bringing the heat. Is that a good way to say that?
Did he step on your toes this week, Darren?
He may have, and you may should tune in Wednesday to see what he said. How's that?
Let's move on into four down territory.
You're in four down territory.
Darren, let's get right to it. Who is your sure thing pick of the week?
My sure thing pick of the week is the Oklahoma Sooners. We talked about kind of the up and down of their season, but I tell you, I think they're coming in this game with BYU. I don't think BYU is going to be a struggle for them. So I think that's the sure thing. I think they do everything they need to do to take care of BYU. How about you? What's your sure thing pick?
I'm going to go to College Station with my sure thing pick. I'm going to pick the Aggies over Abilene Christian University because it doesn't really matter who's coaching A&M in this game. They have enough talent on the field. Their second and third stringers are better than ACU's first stringers. This should not be much of a game at all. It's a chance for A&M players to pad their statistics, if you will. Yeah. I think it's going to be a big win against Abilene Christian, which will be very, very deeply mismatched. How about your upset pick of the week before I offend more people in Abilene?
Upset pick. You know, this is going to be, you've said, why would you let me do this? And this time next week, I might be asking you the same question. Why would you let me do this? But you don't want to pick on a team. But the guys at Mississippi State have been through so much. And now, before the season is even over, their head coach is yanked out from under them. I mean, you can't really be caught off guard that, but the timing of it catches you off guard. That has the potential to really just put absolute upheaval in a locker room, and I think that's exactly what it does. And yes, I know Southern Miss is 3-7, but they have a history of being a strong team that at times can really catch people off guard, and I think this is going to be one of those moments. I think Southern Miss pulls off what is going to be a pretty big surprise and upsets an already rocking Mississippi State Bulldogs. What's your upset pick?
All the folks in Hattiesburg just heard you.
I'm a big man on campus in Hattiesburg for right now.
I'm going with South Carolina pulling off the upset this week. They've got Kentucky coming to town. I know they're only, a point and a half favorites. Mm-hmm. Kentucky is, but I think South Carolina is going to get a much needed home victory. I'm concerned about where Kentucky is at this point in the season. They've had some very tough losses. What is Mark Stoops going to be able to keep his guys playing at a hard level, high level? I don't know, but I know that Shane Beamer is looking for somehow to to find some redeeming moments in this season. And this would be a big one for South Carolina. So I'm going to go with them.
A Beamer-led Gamecock team is strong in November. There is no doubt about that during his time there, for sure.
Cue Sandstorm.
There you go.
How about your brown bag pick from last week, Darren?
Like I said, you hate to pick on somebody, and I definitely don't want to sound like a bitter fan, but have mercy, Vanderbilt. Just brown bag. I don't even have anything else to say. That's my brown bag pick. I wish I had a brown bag. I'd just put it right here. How about you? What's your brown bag?
My brown bag is just down the road east on I-40 from Vanderbilt, and that's in Knoxville. And I'm going with Tennessee and the showing in Missouri. I thought Missouri would win, but I thought it would be a fight, and Tennessee didn't put up much of a fight. 83 yards rushing. That's it.
Yep.
Joe Milton, the quarterback, was the leading rusher, 10 for 36. Jaylen Warren, only seven carries for 22 yards. You've got to be able to run the ball in the SEC. And Tennessee didn't do it, and they didn't show up for this game against Missouri.
No. Good call.
I thought you'd say that.
You knew I'd be in, right? Yeah.
How about our post-game quote of the week? What did you find for us, Darren?
Well, you know, we started off the year talking about how we might not repeat, or at least would try not to. But, you know, there seems to be year in and year out guys that just know how to bring it when they're behind the mic, especially after a win. And Eli Drinkwitz did not disappoint this week. Not only was he happy about the win, but decided to point out how well that Missouri had done this year against all the teams from Tennessee. So let's see what Coach Drink has to say.
Then lastly, you know, we're the Tennessee State champs. You know, we beat Vandy, Tennessee, Middle Tennessee, and Memphis this season. So we'll go ahead and take that honor too. So with that, I'll open up for questions.
All right, Coach Drink, which never disappoints.
Never.
Remember to make your picks on the CBS Sports Pick'em. Remember to subscribe, to like, to comment. New episodes come out every Tuesday. This week, not only is a new episode coming out on Tuesday, but we'll have Doug the Buckeye on Wednesday, and we'll make our picks for this weekend on Thursday. So three shows coming out this week. Hope that you're able to watch every one of those, like those, comment on those. And until the next episode, y'all take care.
Have a great week.
Thank you for making the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast your go-to sports show. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show if you haven't already. Your feedback is important. Let us know what you think about this week's show. Send an email to brewandshavers@gmail.com or text to our text line, 318-390-3599. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you again for listening to the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast. See you next week.